Hi there, and welcome to Let's Slow Down, a podcast for all of you who feel tired and stressed from this overwhelming world. Here we'll have fun, inspiring conversations about living life on our own terms and explore ways to ease the pace of our modern world, because life really is good when you're relaxed enough to be present for it. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Stolting, and I welcome you to this space where I hope to inspire you to slow down, because life is too short to let it go by in a blur. So take a deep breath, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Let's Slow Down podcast. Today, I have guest Sandy Wasnicki with me. She's a stress and anxiety coach and founder of the Graceful Resilience Program. Sandy is helping stressed out parents and leaders find their inner calm so they can show up as the best calm and in control version of themselves. Welcome to Let's Slow Down, Sandy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking time to talk to us today. I know that this topic really resonates with everything that we talk about here on the show. So this is going to be fun learning from you. And we will be sure, I want to let people know, we'll save time at the end to ask Sandy some of the questions that came in from our listeners. I kind of put it out there on social media that we were going to have stress and anxiety coach here, have some questions from the listeners. So we'll be sure to make time for that at the end. Why don't we start with a little bit about you and your journey? What landed you here? What led you to specialize in stress and anxiety coaching?
Well, working through my own, I had, dealt with undiagnosed anxiety for many, many years, but nobody actually talked to me about anxiety or stress. I was going to the doctor because of my insomnia, that I would go there and I would say, look, I can't, my brain won't shut up long enough to let me fall asleep. So they would give me, sleeping medications. And for some reason, they stopped working after the first night or two because I was too anxious. Like, okay, well, here's another medication you can take on top of that. And then I would go for my constantly having stomach issues all throughout the digestive system. It was a wreck. And so they would, do the endoscopy and give me, these other antacids, nothing that was really working. And I was just going for one thing after another. And they just kept treating my symptoms until eventually we realized, okay, all of these are symptoms of anxiety, just the physical manifestation. When I work with people, it's so funny that some people, they're completely focused on the effects in their life from anxiety. And some people, they're so focused on how does the anxiety actually make me feel, like the energy, and I hate the quality of the energy in my body. It feels so uncomfortable. In other people, it's a focus on actual real health concerns that are coming up. So, anxiety, it presents in different ways. It affects our lives in different ways. And, when I say anxiety, it doesn't mean like you're diagnosed with anxiety, but you're feeling really anxious or you just have chronic stress. So anywhere within that bucket. So I did work with some doctors, ended up coming off of the medication, did a lot of that inner work. But I realized it was such a whole body inside and out approach that finally got me to a place where I made the shifts that I needed to make in order to actually feel comfortable in my body, to have the skill sets I needed to handle uncomfortable emotions and all of the other triggers that I had had. And I had a lot of help along the way, but there was a gap that was missing. Like I had doctors, I talked to a therapist for a little while, but it's the implementation of the changes in my life that was the hardest to do when you don't have a system and support and accountability to make changes in your life. It's hard to break habits and to create new habits, whether that's doing things differently for your body or changing your mindset in certain situations. Like you can sit down and talk to somebody for an hour about it, but then, okay, well, I actually have to make changes in my life. And so I sought out to kind of fill that gap as best I could. So I went and I trained. I'd already been trained on the physical side, becoming a yoga teacher and learning about Reiki and the energetic side. And then I wanted a more holistic approach. So I became Ayurvedic practitioner so I could understand that full body approach. And then I started training in cognitive behavioral therapy and somatic therapy as well. And, you know, and then I became a parent and I realized I'd been coaching adults for several years at that point. And then I realized as I became a parent and started studying and training in conscious parenting that I've been teaching grown adults how to consciously parent themselves so that they can better regulate their emotions and relate to themselves in a much more kind and respectful manner, things that they didn't learn growing up. And so I think because of that, I started attracting more and more parents who they're doing this work on themselves, but they also want to be able to do this work with their kids. And like, it's all the same work. You just make changes based off of what's developmentally appropriate for the age of your kids. And that's there wasn't a huge difference between the two. Yeah. So it's been sort of my progression over the years.
It's fascinating. And when you mention all of those physical symptoms that you are having, I feel like we all kind of immediately think, oh, we have to go get that pill at the doctor to get it taken care of. I feel like that's just sort of like how our society operates, right? And getting to the root of it is not always on the forefront. I don't know. I guess they don't realize that that symptom is not the root problem. It is just an effect. It's not the cause. And I've dealt with it myself. A lot of the things that you've mentioned, I feel like I'm nodding my head the whole time. Yep, totally know what you're talking about. I've dealt with it with my kids. And it was interesting. My youngest, unfortunately, she got sick at school once and she was in kindergarten. So, you know, it was just mortifying, of course, at any age, but at 5 years old, she didn't want to go back to school for a little while, the whole thing. And once she kind of got over that, we realized if she ever got nervous about something, she thought she was going to throw up again because she would feel that pit that you get in your stomach. And I have a friend who's a therapist and she said, you know what? You have to explain it. You have to give it words. So we started saying, that's the worry in your belly, but you're not going to be sick. She was immediately afraid. I'm going to throw up in my classroom. No, it's just the worry in your belly. What are you worried about? How do we handle that? And then we would go there and talk about that. But she was so relieved because she was just immediately thinking, oh no, I'm going to throw up. And I thought about that. And I'm like, you know, I love just the simple words that we used around it, just changed it for her, changed it for us, how we talked about it with her. And that was a real learning experience for me. And that was my third kid. You know, it's like I'd been a parent for a while, but plus I grew up too, you know, and I had never really used those types of words, language around worry and anxiety. And that was powerful. So I think the more that we get these tools and language around it and actually just even talk about it, the more sense we can make of it and try to figure out this constantly changing journey that we're all on. And I think it's great that you made this your life mission and turned something that was initially a little bit of a struggle for you into, first of all, overcoming that, and then now being able to help so many other people. So thank you for doing what you do.
Because, I mean, it's so universal. Even, you know, that experience with your five-year-old, adults struggle with the same thing. And you're right. We have to give them the words. When our brains are developing at a young age, we have two sides. We have the logic and the language side of the brain. And then we have the emotion and feeling side of the brain. And it's the emotional feeling side of the brain that's being activated and used the most in the beginning. We feel these big feels. You see the little kids, our little ones, they feel these big feels. And they erupt because, one, they haven't learned how to regulate their emotions yet. It takes years of practice to be able to do that. But also, they don't have the language to explain and understand what it is that they're feeling. And so it's our jobs as parents to help give them those words. So that was a really great example there with your little one. And then, like, I think a common one, like my four-year-old, we're a very I love you family. We say I love you all the time. For example, we're laying in bed after reading books and it's bedtime and my son goes, I love you. I don't love daddy, but I love you. And so like a lot of parents will hear something like that and try to like correct the behavior. But it's, you know, what we want to do is look underneath it and give him the words that he's actually meaning by that. So I didn't say, don't say you don't love your daddy. I asked him, I go, do you mean that right now you want to snuggle with just mommy? and you don't need daddy right now?
Yeah.
Okay. So we love daddy, but right now you want to spend time with mommy.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So I'm like correcting his behavior, telling him he's wrong. I'm giving him the words that he doesn't have. And so many of us growing up, we weren't gifted with that. We you know, usually it's...
We were not. Yeah. I think our whole generation, we did not. And,
like, you're quote unquote misbehaving. You're not behaving, you know, the way you're supposed to be behaving. And we're going to correct that behavior as opposed to giving them the language to help them understand what this feeling is. We can connect those two sides of the brain. And so hopefully as you grow up, that's what I end up helping adults do, right? I'll give it like sort of like your daughter's experience there. She got sick and then it was the fear of getting sick. And that's very similar with people who have panic attacks, for example. And then they fear having a panic attack, and then the fear of the panic attack can bring on the panic attack. And so what we can do is put some words to it. You know, like I have one client who has panic attacks, and she found it incredibly helpful to understand that every physical sensation that your body is experiencing in that moment, so the racing heart, even like your eyes can get sensitive because your eyes are dilating at that point, and you become super sensitive to sound because your ears are hearing much better because your body is in fight or flight mode and it's doing what it needs to keep itself safe in that moment. So being able to shift into, oh, I appreciate that my body is trying to keep me safe in that moment can shift you away from, oh my God, I hate how this feels. This shouldn't be happening. I'm dying right now, to, okay, I appreciate that. This is the way it's happening. May not instantaneously, like a light switch, stop or prevent a panic attack, but it's going to change your relationship with it. It's going to help ease you out of that fight or flight mode a little more easefully, a little more gracefully, and help you feel a lot more in control as opposed to feeling like I have no control over what my body is doing right now.
Yeah, I have learned that myself the hard way, I feel like, probably the last few years, just that really calling out what's actually happening helps to give it less power. And then you just see it for what it is. Oh, okay. And a lot of times I have found that it's usually that I'm just really tired. It's at the end of the day and I'm not handling something well. And I realize, you know what? I think I just need to go to sleep and I'm going to just look at this again tomorrow. I have a pretty busy mind. So I have trouble sleeping sometimes and it can be hard to shut it off. But I realize I just need like a fresh perspective. I need fresh eyes on this in the morning. This is not the time to be tackling this. So whether for me, sometimes I'll just try to read like a fiction book, just something to just distract me, calm me down, go to sleep. But looking back, I can remember times in my life, in my young adult life, where I thought that, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to, I need to switch careers or I need to do this. Like something horrible is happening. And I really was just tired. You know what? You look at it the next day and you have a different view on things. So right. I think it's really helpful to go about it that way and name it.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful too. But I think there's another component in that that is missing in so many people when we're dealing with stress and anxiety. I think one of the most important things that we need to work on is trust in ourselves. So in that example, what you did was that, you know what, I'm going to pause and I trust that tomorrow morning, me will be able to approach the situation with a clear view. But so many times we get sort of caught up and swept up in the swirl of that worst case scenario and we can't see past it. You got to look past it in different ways. Like, okay, if that were to happen, how would I solve that problem? Right? Again, that's putting trust into future me to be able to solve that problem if this worst case scenario happened.
Yeah.
And even like people who are perfectionists, for example, there is a lack of, sometimes it's a lack of trust that, you know, I'm a perfectionist. I know I can do it right. Like I know the right way to do it. And so there's a lack of trust in other people to do things maybe differently from us. But also sometimes like with that perfectionist mindset, like I have to do it right now. Not thinking ahead that, you know what, actually, future me is going to do a really good job at this. And I put my trust in them, right? And that it takes that in order to let it go, to let yourself fall asleep then. And that, when it's just swirling.
It's a good tip. Future me in the morning. I love that. Because it really is true a lot of the time. Not always, but oftentimes it could be something, you know, at the moment, it doesn't feel simple at all. But when we're talking about it like this, it's like, oh, you just needed a few hours of sleep. You know, you just needed to relax and you can handle it. That's really helpful. I think along these same lines, you on your website, you talk about the journey to find peace, joy, and worthiness from within. And that is 100% what I'm looking for, you know, really trying to live more intentionally with more purpose, like step off that hamster wheel and really start making decisions that serve us right now and how we want to live and how we want our future selves to look and operate. And you mentioned how anxiety and overwhelm and self-criticism can really get in the way, which, oh yeah, they could derail you sometimes. So how does your graceful resilience method really help people kind of calm those emotions and, I guess, get out of their own way? I joke, but it's true, like, that I'm usually my own worst enemy with a lot of things. Like, I feel like I'm the one who's preventing myself from a lot of things. So how do we get out of our own way?
Get out of your own way. Well, you know, it's a great question. I mean, it's a complex question, but it's how I break it down is I first look at, like, you know, like you said, like anxiety, like the overwhelm and the criticism. Those are, they're blocks, but they're also drains, like that constant overthinking and that being highly critical of ourselves. It's like a hole in our cup. Like, you even notice within yourself, like, oh, sometimes I'm just tired, and that's where a lot of this is coming from. The lower that cup gets, the less capacity we have for, you know, staying calm and in control, or staying in our reasonable state where we have access, full access to like the cognitive part of our brain, which sort of goes a little bit offline when we're in that fight or flight mode, because, you know, thinking takes too long. We want to be reactionary, right?
Yeah.
Actually be threatened. So what we take a look at is filling that cup. Right? You fill it with food and sleep and water, and but also joy and connection and fun and moving our bodies, right? That's how our cup gets full. We look at the holes in the cup. What are the draining things? So we do proactive work to maintain basically our nervous system. So are you just going from task to task to task to task to task all day long, never pausing? So we want to take a look at where's your opportunity for some adjustments throughout the day. So we're already filling the cup. Okay, let's plug the holes in the drains. And then we're going to look at the right reactionary tools for you, right? So at this point, like, nobody expects to have zero stress in their entire life. Things are going to stress us out. But what we really want is to not get stressed to be triggered so often or so easily. And we don't want to spike so high. And we want to be able to get back down into calm and in control more easily and more gracefully. So that's finding tools for you. And so there's different tools for different reasons, you know, and some people may need more time to process. I'm not a fast processor. So I may time out. I need to go step away and let my nervous system come back down, whether that's, and I do that by moving my body. So it's not all just doing grounding work. Like, so if you have, let's say it's more like anger and like a very heightened anxiety, you can feel the quality of the energy in your body is kind of like fast moving and it's up high. You might want to burn that off before doing the calming and grounding exercises. So it's like, I'm doing the breath work, but it's not working. We might need to move your body first, right? Because especially when there's anger involved, you might have cortisol and adrenaline pumping through your veins that you need to burn off first. So tap into your body and check, is this something that I need to move? And you might not even need to ask yourself that question. You just might notice you kind of like having this nervous energy walking through your house, putting things away or slamming doors or anything like that. You know, your knee is jumping up and down while you're sitting in the chair. Those are all signs that, okay, let me just go move my body for 15 to 20 minutes. And you'll probably notice, and maybe you've even noticed this in yourself, like maybe there's an argument with your partner and you go away, maybe do some angry cleaning in the bedroom or something like that. And at a certain point,
you are talking to your stress cleaner.
Yeah. Well, you might notice in yourself, you might at a certain point be open to, okay, like maybe I did overreact a little bit, or maybe I can kind of see where they're coming from. Those are all signs that you are switching from fight or flight mode back into like that rest and digest mode, which means having so much more access to your thinking power at that point. So those are good signs for you. But the trust piece is crucial here. So what we do next is a practice I call soulful alignment, which is helping you get to know the real you, like who you are. How do you want to show up in your life? Describing you in adjectives that makes you a unique individual. Is it that you care about being compassionate, curious, or direct, or hardworking, or what makes you, and if you are living in alignment with that, would that feel so good to you? Because that's the first step to getting to trust yourself. You got to get to know yourself. Like, you're not going to walk into a bar and meet a stranger and instantly trust and like them. You got to get to know them first. So you get to know yourself. I think especially once you sort of hit like a new milestone in life, or hitting like that middle age, it's like, whoa, let me go back and recalibrate and connect with who I want to be and how I want to show up in my life. And I'll give you like an example. I was always class comedian, you know, cracking jokes and humor I thought was so important to me. And then doing this exercise, it made me realize how much I was using humor as a mask to sort of almost try to, almost like a from a people-pleasing point of view, if I can make other people happy around me, then that means I'm doing good. But I realized that as after I went through this practice for myself, because when I would think back to any time that I would like crack a joke at somebody's expense or at very poor timing and it just didn't land, I would feel so terrible inside. Like it did not feel in alignment with how I wanted to be showing up. Even though humor really matters so much to me, that felt awful. And I realized that compassion matters more to me than humor. Humor still matters a lot to me. I think it's such an important part of life. Other people, it doesn't make it to the top of the list. For me, it does, but not more important than compassion. But then you might look at a comedian who up on stage, they make a career out of bringing joy and laughter to people's lives. Like they create memorable experiences for people. And they're going to care more about that than the person in the fourth row who, you know, maybe took their joke personally and kind of upset about it, right? It's one's not better than the other. It's just, this is what's in alignment for me. That's what's in alignment for you. So not only does it help us get to know ourselves better, but it gives us a roadmap for when we get stressed, we veer off course. Right? We go into fight or flight mode. We're not consciously choosing to do those things, right? They're just sort of how we react in survival mode. But this brings you back. It helps you make decisions on how do I want to show up with this? You know, it really matters to me, even though I'm mad at this person and this situation, being compassionate or being curious or being open-minded, whatever it is to you. If that is a value that matters to me, I can ask myself, how can I show up to the situation in alignment with my values? And so getting to know yourself, getting to like yourself, getting to trust yourself, and that opens the door to being able to communicate with yourself in a different way, right? I heard you say, I get in my own way, I'm my own worst enemy, right? So again, that's the way it feels. And those are the easy words to put to it, right? But if we're to go back and put maybe some more truthful words, more accurate words to it, it might sound something like, you know what? Sometimes I get scared and I procrastinate. I look forward to breaking that habit. You see how, like, I see you nodding your head. So that may be
much nicer.
But is it more accurate, maybe?
Right. Yes, that too.
Right. So finding the most, because that's something that I'm my own worst enemy. What can I even do with that? Like putting words to what does that really mean so that you can communicate with yourself in a much more respectful and compassionate and understanding way, which is, you know, instead of being the critic, which, you know, so far hasn't really helped you as much as you would like, that inner criticism, it has a good intention behind it. It's trying to make you be better or do better or try to keep you safe in some way. It's just not the best strategy because it's not as effective.
It's like with our friendships. Like a lot of times I notice that, you know, if I have a friend come to me with a problem, the advice and the compassion and the way that I show up as the friend, I wouldn't necessarily be giving that. Sometimes I have to remind myself, what would I tell a friend? Like, forget that it's myself, you know? Like, we treat our friends and sometimes the people around us better than we treat ourselves. We're just harsher and much more. You're talking like that criticism. We would never say that out loud to somebody else, but we somehow, some of us, like myself, have no problem saying it to ourselves in our head. So kind of speaks to what you're saying.
Exactly. And especially when you look at your own values, if being compassionate or honest or understanding are values that matter to you very much, then you might look at the way you're talking to yourself and see, okay, I see an opportunity for more alignment with my value of being honest. And I think calling myself, you know, a bad mom isn't very honest because I'm completely discounting all of the good things that I've done. And it's not a very compassionate way to talk to myself. So that's another great use for those values, but it's sort of a catalyst to being able to find the words to motivate yourself from a place of love and compassion and support, as opposed to just beating ourselves over and over again.
Because those words are, and those feelings are more motivating than the other way.
I think a lot of us sort of grew up with that criticism, with that, oh, why did you do that? What is wrong with you? You know, that kind of talk. And I think a lot of times our parents' way of communicating, either with us, with our siblings, or with our other parent, they can translate into our own inner monologue. It's pretty common. It's how we sort of, you know, if you've ever read the Four Agreements, it's a big part of this rule book for our life that ends up getting created for us. And then as we get older, we get to then look at that rule book that we've been either consciously or most often unconsciously living our lives by and go with what feels wrong. And then we could open up the rule book and realize, oh, I'm not allowed to acknowledge my accomplishments because then that would make me, you know, look arrogant. And then we never learn how to cheer ourselves on or acknowledge our accomplishments.
Those rules need to change as we change, right?
Yeah,
for sure. These are so many good ways to approach this stuff. I mean, I really love how you go about talking about this and giving us a different language and a different view of it, because it's so important and it can be a huge game changer for your day and much, much more than, right? Your life. If we begin to practice these habits that, like you said, a lot of us aren't necessarily even aware that we're talking this way to ourselves and thinking this way. I always say I'm getting in my own way, so I'm going to be reframing that and talking to myself differently for sure. So I want to tackle a few questions that came in. I wanted to make sure we had time to ask you. Here's one. Someone who does suffer from anxiety was asking, how can I channel my anxiety into something positive when I feel an attack coming? So I think we kind of touched on this, but I'm going to let you answer this again.
I think if at the point that you feel an anxiety attack coming on, at that point, we're using reactive tools because it sounds like you're describing like train starting to leave the station, right? So at that point, I would focus for a few moments on just regulation within the body and calming that nervous system. So I know this is an audio podcast, so I'll do the best I can to describe a few different things that you can do within your body. So of course, we all know like you can do different breath work to practice that. So when one simple rule with using breath work to help calm your nervous system at that point is to have your exhale be longer than your inhale. That's going to trigger your body into your parasympathetic nervous system state. So when I say first work on your nervous system, if your brain is like swirling over whatever the problem is that's causing the anxiety attack, if you could just tell your brain, you know what, I'm just going to pause on solving this problem for a moment. And right now, my job is to just calm my nervous system. So we can do some breath work, but I would also recommend inviting in some, putting your hands on your body in a very like loving and supportive way. So a few ways to do that. One would be, like, I just call it the self hug, which is taking one hand and grabbing onto the side of your rib cage. The other hand is going to grab the outside of your arm. And you're just going to hold yourself like that as you do some slow breaths. That's going to help make your nervous system feel really supported and safe. So that's what it needs. Your nervous system needs to feel safe at the moment. Another option is if you put one hand on your heart and one hand on your forehead. That's especially helpful if your mind is just racing like crazy. And again, you're just going to breathe slowly. This can really just take a couple of moments. We just want to feel that nervous system calm down. And the one that I gravitate towards the most is one hand on my heart and one hand on my solar plexus. That solar plexus area is really connected to, like, our self-confidence and our can-do attitude. And sometimes that's something that's getting blocked when we're feeling anxious. So those are a couple of different hand positions you can do. I would also recommend moving your body in ways that you would not move your body if your life was threatened. And so by that, I mean when we're in fight or flight mode, our nervous system thinks that we're in danger. So it's going to do certain things. It's going to keep our eyes looking forward because that's where we're going to see our threats, is looking forward. So looking all around, looking off to the left, looking off to the right, even moving your head, looking over your shoulder, almost thinking about, okay, I want to see where all of my exits are. Those are body postures that we don't do when we're in fight or flight mode. So these are all different things that you can do with your body just to bring in that calming sensation. And thinking about where can you go next, because the question was, you know, channeling it into something positive. That first positive thing is just bringing some loving attention into your nervous system. But then, you know, before you go into problem solving mode for whatever it is that, you know, triggered you in the first place, if there is something specific, just thinking about doing a simple kind gesture for somebody. You know, you've got a friend, I realize you haven't talked to in a couple of weeks, send them a message, say, hey, I really hope you're having a great day. Or complimenting someone in the grocery store. That's one of my favorite things too. Especially if I need to get out of my own head, is at the grocery store, walking down the street, giving people some compliments or looking them in the eye and giving them a smile. Just those little things can be enough. That was really helpful for me when I was in my anxiety for a while, is I also had really bad social anxiety, but I had this walk into work every day. And this gentleman one day, he caught my eye and he gave me the most genuine smile I think I'd gotten in so long. And it felt amazing. And it was like for 1 second. And it felt so good. And it stuck with me so hard that I turned my walk to and from work every day into, I was trying to catch people's eyes so that I could try to give them a genuine smile. And sometimes they didn't smile back and sometimes they did. I have no idea if I smiled back at a gentleman or if it didn't catch me until later, but it had such a huge impact on me. So I thought, what a great gift to give somebody, just that one moment of connection, really just to help continue getting out of whatever swirl you're in, calming and sending some love into your body, pushing out a little bit of goodness. And then if there was something that happened that needs problem solving, that's when you're going to approach it from that calm state. But have in mind, no, this is my problem solving hat, because there's a difference between worrying and problem solving. The worrying creates the anxiety. Problem solving is where we take control.
I love that. I love every single one of those tips to me. Even just talking about them, like, made me feel calmer. Not that I'm very anxious at the moment talking to you, but it just, like, puts you at ease. And I felt myself even relax more. And I've noticed that with a good smile, because you know what? People don't make eye contact much anymore. That is not the norm. Everybody's looking at their phones or just not look. I mean, I notice when I walk my dog, sometimes I have to, like, make the effort. People just will walk right by you. I feel like it's harder to do that than say hi, you know, just hello and just make eye contact for a second. But it can really change your whole day. So, and your mood. And you said you don't even know how you reacted in that moment, but you remember that moment and how profound it was for you. So that's beautiful. I love it. All right. I'm going to pick one more. One was talking about burnout. Let's go with this. Any tips on how to start recovering from burnout?
So if you've reached a point where you're already burnt out, know that, you know, what was it? It was Kristen Bell. I'm trying to think that she, I love this quote that her therapist had given her. She, it, I guess the therapist had said that, you know, you can't walk 10 miles into the woods and expect to get out in 5. As in, it's not, there's not a quick fix. So a lot of people,
right,
they'll like go on a vacation and then go back and they're straight back to being burnt out, or they're stressed the whole time on vacation. Yeah. I would say like taking a vacation for burnout is like slapping an expensive Band-Aid on a broken arm. It's not getting to the root of the problem. So with burnout, if you can take some time off, that would be great. Not everybody has that as a luxury. So you want to look at a couple of different things. One, you need some quality sleep. So whatever you can do, and there's a, I don't know in this hypothetical situation, somebody dealing with burnout, what their sleep is, and especially if you have young kids, it's not always an option. But finding any possible way to get even more sleep, but also throughout the day. This isn't going to be like a, you know, go and do this one thing for an hour. This is going to be little things throughout the day to pause as often as you can just to, well, I just consider it like recalibrating and calming your nervous system. So when you're in between tasks, you finish reading this email, you're about to go on to the next email, pause and do this. I'm done doing this task before I go on to do the next task. Pause and either, you know, do some of those hands on the body that I had mentioned, taking some deep breaths, just preventing the stress from building up throughout the day, you're going to proactively calm and regulate your nervous system all throughout the day. So those are little things. That's when, especially when you're dealing with burnout, you're going to have to look more closely at your boundaries and saying no to things or delegating and asking for help. I think a lot of people get burnt out because that's the skill set that needs the most work. Either it's a perfectionist thing, or it's a fear of rejection, or maybe they've had some experiences in the past where they asked for help and they didn't get it. So they think that, you know, why bother asking? But keep doing it. Keep asking, keep delegating, and say no to certain things, as many things as you possibly can say no to. But then anything you can do to help support your body even more. If you're not exercising, start just moving your body a little bit more, right? Don't go 0 to 60. Just start on creating a habit, which is parking farther away, getting in some more steps, you know, on your way to the grocery store.
Smile to someone on your way in.
Smile to somebody on the way in. You know, all of there's lots of little things to do to support your body better, but that's where you want to start.
Thank you. Those are great tips. Great tips. This is going to be so helpful for people. I want to thank you for taking your time today and sharing all of this knowledge and wisdom and all of these ways that we can make ourselves feel a little calmer and less stressed. Thanks for being here, Sandy. And where can people find you? Because I'm sure they're going to want to check you out and learn more.
Sure. Well, on social media, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok as Happy Woz, as HAPPYWOZ. Or you can come to my website, which is stressandanxietycoach.com.
Perfect. And I will link those in the show notes so people can find them easily. Thank you again for your time and for coming on Let's Slow Down.
Hey, this is great. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and have been inspired to slow down and start living life at your own pace. As a brand new podcast, your listener voice matters. If Let's Slow Down is resonating with you, please take a minute to leave a review and rate us. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen and share it with friends. Remember, this is a process, so go easy on yourself. Be gentle and take all the space you need to thrive, because the world needs you to be at your best, to love and serve others and yourself.